Hello. To anybody listening and watching, I'm Jack Lemmon. I'm going to be telling stories about the making of Mr. Roberts with these incredible people that I was fortunate enough to be with, Hank Fonda and Jimmy Cagney and Bill Powell and the great John Ford directing. If you get sick of me, you can always just turn it off and watch the film. The film isn't so bad, you know. I think it was working with John Ford, although I have great respect for Mervyn LeRoy, who took over when Pappy Ford got sick partway through and had to have his gallbladder removed in the middle of the night. And that by noon the next day, Mervyn LeRoy was directing the film and doing his best. And I think he did a superb job of directing the scenes the way he thought that John Ford would shoot them. And there's an awful lot of people to this day that will never be able to guess which scenes were done by whom. But he just gathered us together, and he said, "Fellas, I'm not about to start telling you how to play the parts by now." He said, "The stuff looks wonderful." He had spent the entire morning, this was around lunchtime, he had spent the entire morning looking at all of the rushes shot to date, which was over half of the film. He was very happy with it. And he said, "You guys know what you're doing." He says, "I'll just move you around and try to shoot it the way it was set up, so that I think Pappy would have used." And away we went. I think it was working with John Ford and with Hank Fonda and Bill Powell and Jimmy Cagney. I became very, very close to all three of them, more so than to Pappy Ford, who was pretty tough. I mean, you can get close to him, of course, and he had his own sort of stock company and all of that, but you don't get as close as you can to Hank or to Bill Powell or to Jimmy Cagney. I became very friendly with all three and remained very close to them until they passed away.
To continue with the commentary, please select Chapter 2 on the Jump to a Scene menu pages.
Now hear this. Now hear this. Reveille. I repeat, reveille. Attention all hands. Because another cigarette butt has been found in the container of the captain's palm tree, there will be no movies again tonight. That is all.
All right, hit the deck. Rise and shine, greet the new day. Off your hock and grab your sock. Reveille, reveille.
Okay, Chief, you've done your duty. Now get your big fat can out of here.
There was one Hank Fonda, and he was Mr. Roberts. That's it. There is no actor I can think of. Bobby De Niro is a great actor. Marlon's a great actor. Nobody could play that part better than Hank Fonda, I don't think. And nobody ever will. I've been asked to play it now, not playing Pulver, but playing Roberts, and turned it down because I just would not be comfortable doing it. All I would think of is Hank. He was incomparable to me. But if you work with Hank Fonda and Jimmy Cagney and then add Bill Powell, with three legends like that, if you don't learn something, then you're in the wrong business. If we were all selling shorts at Macy's, I'd be selling better shorts or selling shorts better after working with them than I was before.
I was greeted with six more cases of Berry Berry. Double Berry Berry this time. So help me, I'm going down to the ship's library and throw that old copy of Moby Dick overboard.
What are you giving him these days for double beriberi?
Aspirin, what else? Something wrong, Dad?
Nah. Huh?
Yeah, we missed you when you went on watch last night. I gave young Ensign Pulver another drink of alcohol and orange juice, and it inspired him to relate further amorous feats of his.
Did he tell you about the time he overwhelmed the 45-year-old...
Hank had a tremendous force and tremendous presence as an actor. When he was in a scene, he was the maypole, and everybody else would dance around him, whether he had the lines or not. And he gave great strength to everybody else by just being there. He could listen, like Spencer Tracy, who was maybe the greatest listener of all the actors I've ever seen. He and Robert Donat were marvelous that way. But Hank really could get in there. He would turn it on and get totally involved and be in it as much as any method actor that ever walked. He would do something only if he felt that the character would do that and it was good for the scene. Otherwise, he would just not do it. And almost always, it was of help to the other actors. He was a very generous actor, and he really strengthened every scene that he was ever in, to my knowledge, that I've ever seen in his work.
I've never seen a battleship.
They came on and passed within a half a mile of that.
Overall, I formed three really great friendships out of that film, aside from getting one of the great parts in history.
I could see the men on the bridges. And this is what knocked me out, Doc.
It's very interesting.
Somehow.
Watching Ford work
made
me start to think like a director, in a way, which I think in film is very valuable for an actor. Because there are different ways of playing things, and you pick up little things like being able to lead a camera.
I know how that must have hurt.
With how you use your body, and when you turn your head, you can lead an editor into a cut that he doesn't have to cut, but it, in your mind, and very often, thank God I've been right, I've deliberately done that. Turned my head at a certain point, and bang, there the cut will come and go to the other person when I think that the audience would want to go there, you know. Thinking like a director is good for an actor because it makes you think of the whole of the scene, not just what could I do, but what should I do to help the thrust of the scene. See, an awful lot of actors don't act with you. They act at you. They say the lines. And basically, they can look very interested, and it looks like they're listening all of this and that. What they're really listening for is the cue for their next speech. They're not really in it with you. Because when you're really listening to somebody, it isn't just the words that they're saying, it's what's coming from inside, and it can be totally different than the words they're saying. An example being that while we were shooting the film, a friend of mine from New York that I had known in the theater and live TV had moved out here. He's no longer with us, but he was a pretty well-known character actor and a good actor. And he had moved out with his wife and kids, etc., a little before I came out. And he came down to visit me one day in the set. And we were sitting in one of the little dressing room things, the little canvas dressing room things that they would put on the set. He was telling funny stories about his kids and his wife and this rubber swimming pool that he had, and they kept poking holes in the damn thing, and it was beginning to look like a patchwork quilt where he was putting tape over it, trying to save it, and then when he'd blow it up again, some of the tape would fly off because of the pressure of the air, and he was having a hell of a time. And while he was telling the story, this is what I mean by really listening, I knew something was wrong, and something was wrong with him. But he was laughing away and telling these stories and being very funny. But sure enough, pretty soon tears started to come down his cheeks. And then finally, he realized he was rubbing them off.
Getting up yet?
And he stopped everything, and he just put his hand on his head, and then he looked up, and he said to me, "Can you loan me $1,000? I'm desperate." This is what was killing him. And he was trying to tell this funny story and everything, you know, and gradually get into the other. But what was really coming out was not the comedy and the humor and everything. I knew there was something else under it. Well, that is what a guy like Hank or Jimmy or Bill Powell would feel in a scene coming from another actor.
Oh, your letter. Yes, sir.
And when you work with guys like that, and really fine actors, Pacino and De Niro and Dusty Hoffman, and there's a whole crop of new ones now coming since the giants of then, and Jimmy Stewart is gone too, damn it. You learn. You can't help but learn. I can't verbalize it more, but you know what they're doing, and you're part of it. And it's of immeasurable help. It really is, and it stays with you. And you know when you're trying to do it at other times, after you've done it with guys with real pros like that, and you know when it's not happening, and that you've got to fake it or you've got to save it somehow, you know. But that's when they're acting at you, not with you.
Now.
Hey, Doc, when I woke up this morning, I
remembered you were working cargo. Continue.
To continue with the commentary, please select Chapter 5 on the Jump to a Scene menu pages.
That appendix of yours certainly gets around, Reba. Now it's on the wrong side. 2 aspirin marked for duty. Next.
Aspirin? For a floating appendix, Doc?
Yeah, it's the latest thing. I'll have one with you. Next. Well, where do you hurt?
It's my head, Doc. It's my head.
Dizzy?
Well, yeah, it's terrible.
Ringing in your ears?
Well, I mean, it's all the time, Doc.
Like bells?
That's it, Doc, like bells. Huh? That Doc.
How do they go? Dong dong, ding ding, or ding dong? It's important.
Ding. Dong? Dong ding?
No second guessing. Too bad. Should go dong dong. 1 aspirin, marked for duty.
There is now available at the ship store a small supply of peanut brittle. Ship store will be open from 1300 to 1315.
You, Signer, got a real special job for you. You stay right here and clean these binoculars for the bridge.
Now let me work up forward, Chief. I want to be around this crud man yet.
Yeah, Chief, take a Signer with you.
Oh, get lost, you jerk.
Cut it out, the both of you. I'm tired of you two bellyaching. Now go on, get scraping.
Hey, Steph, which end of these binoculars are you supposed to look through, huh?
Well, I guess it's optional on Cigna. Depends on what size eyeball you got.
Hey, what time would it be in San Francisco?
About midnight last night.
Midnight last night? Hey, the Japs must have took over that island. There's a red and white flag on that new building.
Japs? We ain't been within 5,000 miles of any Japs.
Japs, you hear that, Wiley?
Smart, ain't
you? That's a hospital flag.
Hey, Steph! Hey, they got a fancy building on that island. Yeah. Hey, they got big windows and...
Holy cow!
Holy cow, he got nurses on that island! That nurse! She's taking a shower! Yeah, look! Second story, see? She's a blonde, see?
Get off my back!
Ah, knock it off! I never seen such a beautiful girl.
sure taken a long time in that shower.
Yeah, honey. Come on over here by the window.
How do you use this thing?
Oh, there's another one over by the wash basin taking a shampoo. Ah, she's got a bathrobe on.
What a stupid way to take a shampoo with a bathrobe on.
What's stupid about it? You think she wants a...
Wow!
Please, fellas, come on.
Didn't I tell you she was beautiful?
Yeah, man.
I can't even see the island.
So long, Blondie.
Uh-oh. Here goes the other one.
Imagine that pig not taking a shower.
Oh, come on, girls. Who's next?
I'm getting it. Yeah. But there ain't no one in there now.
Hey, yeah, sweet, try mine. They must think we got nothing better to do than stand here. You see anything, sweet?
No, you've been panting on the lens.
Now, these glasses are getting heavy.
Yeah, we're wasting manpower. Let's take turns, okay?
Yeah, I'll take the first watch.
Okay.
Oh, there was one other Cagney story that really cracked me up. It really shows how alert Jimmy was and how he noticed everything and anything. Before I ever came out to Hollywood and did the first film, I was doing live TV and doing a revival of Room Service on Broadway and so forth. And one of the last shows that I did before I came out, it was either a Kraft Music Hall or a Robert Montgomery Presents. It probably was a Robert Montgomery Presents because Jimmy, I think, was a close friend of Bob Montgomery's. And so he would be watching that show. At any rate, in that show, I had the lead. It was a live TV show, an hour. And I decided, without telling anybody, including the director, that I would make the guy left-handed. Because as an actor, in my conceit, I wanted to feel that I could do pieces of business and everything with my left hand just as readily as I could with my right. And I've always used my hands an awful lot anyhow, too much, but anyway. So I played the entire part left-handed, and I did more pieces of business with my left hand than any guy that's ever lived that was left-handed. I never did anything with my right. I might as well have stuck it in my side pocket and left it there. But I did everything with my left hand. And after the performance, I went home and asked my then-wife, Cynthia, I said, how'd you like it? And she said, I liked it very much. It was a very good performance. And I said, you notice anything different about me? And she said, no. And I told her. She said, you played the whole thing that day? And she stopped and thought, thanks. She said, my God, you did. But you did it beautifully because I never noticed it. It just seemed totally natural. And when I saw the director a few days later, after it had been reviewed and this and that, he called up and said, let's have lunch and everything. I told him, and he says, my God, I never knew it. I didn't notice you working on it. He said, it just was very natural. Now, fade out, fade up, God knows how many years, whatever. Now comes Mr. Roberts, and I have yet to meet Mr. Cagney. We meet finally at the airport when we're going to Midway Island. And as I approached all of the guys in the tunnel where everybody was gathering, Jimmy Cagney turned and said, hello, kid. He says, I'm Cagney. Are you still trying to pretend that you're left-handed? So help me God, that was it. Are you still trying to pretend that you're left-handed? From that show, and he remembered it.
Yeah, they sure do. Dowdy, call a boat for me, will you? I'm going ashore.
What are you
going
to do?
I just got a new angle.
You're not going over the captain's head.
No, I'm going around his end, I hope. Get the lead out, Dowdy.
If I could be with you 1 hour tonight, if I was free to do the things I might, I'm telling you true, I'd be anything but blue if I could be with you.
Yeah, I was an ensign like Pulver. All I had to do was just think of how much I screwed up and just let it go.
What's
it's one of those parts where you don't have to do a great deal of research to get the guy or a version of him.
I'll go get some aspirin for
you. Don't have to know a lot about the Navy or any of this. A few phrases or this and that, you know, a terminology which is very easy to pick up. But that's about it.
Furlough Pulver. You mean to say you'd be willing to unglue yourself from that sack for the purpose of doing a favor for someone else?
Now, let's just not have any more of that usual attitude towards Pulver, boy.
Please select Chapter 7 on the Jump to a Scene menu pages.
Okay. Just in case, Pulver, boy, just in case. You sure are a sympathy. I could be with you tonight. Oh, if I could be with you an hour tonight.
See you later, Doug boy.
Okay.
Now, what do you want? If I could be with you, I'd love you strong. If I could be with you, I'd love you long. I want you to know I wouldn't go until I told you, honey, why I love you so. If I could be with you one hour tonight, if I was free to do the things I might, I'm telling you true, I'd be anything but blue if I could be with you. Oh, if I could...
Welcome aboard.
Oh, my goodness. Attention.
Well, this is going to be all right. Yeah, but you girls just got in here, huh? Where are you from? No, don't tell me. Let me guess. Hey, how many of you girls are there?
Captain, aren't you going to answer our salute?
Answer? Sure, yeah. It'll make you feel any happier.
Yeah. We thought maybe we were doing it wrong, Captain. You see, we haven't had much experience.
Well, that's wonderful.
Is that your battleship in the harbor, Captain?
Not exactly, no.
Is there anything you want? I mean, anything in particular?
No, nothing I can think of in particular. Oh, aspirin. What about the aspirin? I got a requisition right here. Aspirin right here.
All right, right this way. Get back to work, men.
Carry on there, men. You know, I'm actually not captain of that AK.
Oh, no kidding.
I'm, the exec.
Certainly must have an awful lot of BF.
Who, me? What do you mean, me?
Battle fatigue with all this aspirin.
Oh.
Seen a lot of action?
Well, I, sure as heck haven't seen much action this past year. You mean battle action? Well, I got a little shrapnel in my left leg, but it's, it gives me a twinge now and then.
Well, I hear the scotch works wonders.
You like scotch?
I was acquiring the taste for it before they shipped us out. Here's your aspirin.
Thanks. Would you like to come out to the ship this afternoon?
Sorry.
Because it just so happens I have a bottle of Red Label in my cabin.
And the shore boat at the dock at 1800 minus 10.
Oh, will I? 1800 minus 10. Let's see, 1218 to 60.
It's 10 minutes to 6.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I caught your interest. I don't want these other girls to hear, but if you were to come over alone this afternoon...
Here's your letter, Mr. Roberts. I typed it up.
I think being cast as Ensign Pulver was one of the biggest breaks of my life. Professionally, there's no question about that. And as sometimes happen, although it sounds like a made-up Hollywood story, it's totally true. It was a fluke. When I first came to Columbia to do a picture with Judy Holliday, at the time I tested for that, it was called It Should Happen to You, the George Cukor directed. At the same time, they asked me, for some unknown reason, to test for a part in The Long Gray Line that was going to be played by Tyrone Power, according to John Ford, who was the director. And that's exactly the way it ended up, and the way it should have ended up, may I say. But at any rate, I did, and the part aged from like 30 or 28 or something like that, which was older than I was, but at any rate, it aged up to about 79 or 80 years old, as I remember, and they tested me only as the old man. Ford wouldn't even look at the test. He says, "I don't want an unknown." He said, "I'm using Tyrone Power." And even Ford was able to tell Harry Cohen what the hell he was going to do, and he's probably the only one who could. Maybe Billy Wilder. Anyway, so he never looked at it until one day it was tacked on to the end of the rushes while he was doing the film. I had already finished my first film with Judy. The guy, Maurice Max, who was a friend of mine and an assistant editor at the studio, was in charge of running the dailies for all of the different films. And for some reason or other, he tacked my test on at the end of Tyrone Power's dailies. And Ford sat there, and then when the lights came up, he turned to Jerry Wald, who was second in command at that time, and said, "Who the hell was that?" And Jerry Wald said, because Maurice Max could hear them talking through the intercom thing, Jerry Wald said, "Oh, that's a kid, Jack Lemmon, that we got. He just finished a film with Judy Holliday. He's under contract here." Now, the next film Ford was going to do was Mr. Roberts.
To Jean L'Amour.
And for some odd reason, who knows what he saw, I have no idea, but here I was playing an 80-year-old Irishman, hardly Ensign Pulver. He stood up and he said, "Well, I'll tell you something. He's a lousy old man, but I think he'd be a very good Pulver." Now, Maurice Max told me that. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. At any rate, I walked over to the set where he was shooting, finishing up the picture with Tyrone Power, just to see what was going on and to get a look at him, because I didn't know him and I didn't know what he looked like exactly. And I walked on in an old grip and a pair of sneakers and baggy pants and a sort of ripped up jacket, a hat pulled down and a patch over one eye, and chewing on a handkerchief. He walked up to me. I thought he must have been a grip from the film that I had just done, that I didn't remember. And he says, "You Lemon, huh? You're this kid they got under contract here?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "I understand that you want to play Pulver." And I said, "Well, I don't know who told you, but they're sure right." And he said, "You really want to be Pulver?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Spit in your hand." I said, "What?" He said, "It's an Irish custom, spit in your hand." And he then spit in his hand and stuck it out. So I pretended I went to it, as if I had spit, and shook hands with it. And he said, "You're Pulver and I'm Ford."
"I'm really sorry."
Damn near died.
"Simon in a year.
I was going to bring her right in here. Had all my old pillows out. Slip her a couple of fast slugs of scotch and..."
I had had a couple of offers in years past, prior to that, when I was a young, even younger kid, to come out under the old 7-year contract bit, where you do whatever the studio tells you to do. And even though I wasn't working, I turned them down. I've forgotten which studios, but one or two studios, MGM, I think, and somebody else offered me them. But when the Columbia one came, it was specifically for this part opposite Judy, which I got, thank God, when I tested. And the contract was for 7 years, for 2 pictures a year, but I could also do outside pictures at any studio, and then if I couldn't do 2 that year at Columbia, they would tack it on. And I also could go back to Broadway and do 4 plays in the 7 years, and they would take that amount of time, however long it took, and tack that on too. There's only one thing they didn't count on. It's not legal. It wouldn't hold up in court, thanks to Olivia de Havilland and Betty Davis when they sued Warner and whoever the other one was. Around 1960 or something like that, and I still had about 3 or 4 pictures left in my contract, when Bert Allenberg, I was then with the William Morris Agency, and Bert Allenberg, who was a marvelous agent, and I was sitting one day, I think we were having lunch or else we were just sitting down in his office chatting, I don't know. And he said, "You know something? You still got those pictures that they've tacked on. Like Some Like It Hot was another one that I did outside, etc., in the apartment there." He said, "I don't think that's legal." So he went and had a talk with the guys that were then running Columbia. I think Harry had passed away by then, Harry Cohen. They said, "You're right, forget it." So I still owe Columbia about 4 pictures for $10,000 or something or other, if they had their way.
Let me try that.
If I'm flipping around and I happen to be watching television at a time when it's on, if I flip by and Roberts is on, I'll stop. And I'll watch it for 10 or 15 minutes. The first few times I watched for the rest of the film, wherever I came in, and liked it. Usually, when I look at work that I have done years ago, I see things wrong. And I think, why did I do it that way? Well, Jesus, what did I do that for? And I flip. I'll go to something else. Because I think that, you know, if I were doing the part today, I would play it differently. I would do this, I would do that, whatever. But that was at a different time and a different age. And I was playing a younger character. And I probably was right the first time. I don't think if I had the choice of doing it again and I could be the same age, but know what I had now, I don't think I would play it much differently. I think it was a good performance, myself, frankly. Actors give good performances all the time, you know, and bad ones all the time. I think it was a good performance. How good it stacks up with the other guys that have played the part is not for me to judge. I have no idea. Davy might have knocked our socks off. Davy Wayne. He was the original Pulver, and he was marvelous. The reason I'm sure that Davy did not play it in the film was that by the time we got to the film, it had been such a hit for so many years. It was like 5 to 7 years or so, I think, after the play opened, before we did the film. He was just a tad too old to play it on screen. You know, you can get away with a lot more on stage. I don't know how. Davy isn't with us any longer, but I would guess that Davy now would be about 85 or something like that, at least. At any rate, he was just a little too old, was the word that I got because I asked her. I said, I wonder why Davy isn't playing it. And that was the reason, I'm sure. I got to be very friendly with David later. I never did bring it up with him, except he brought it up to me because he liked the film very much. Fortunately, he liked my performance. At least he was very kind in the words that he used to tell me about it. We became friends. He would have been brilliant, I know that, because he was brilliant in the play. But it was interesting. We both played Pulver at the same time, in a sense, I guess, on the Ed Sullivan show. As I remember, the cast from the play did a scene or two or something, or parts of a scene, and then the cast from the film, Hank and Jimmy Cagney and I, did some scenes. And I remember at one point that, of all people, Jimmy went high as a kite. He was doing a scene with Hank, and Hank couldn't pull him out of it. And there was a long silence. Now, I don't know whether they ever edited that on the kinescope of the show. I don't think they had tape then. I'm not sure. But I don't believe so. I think it was just kinescope. Now, whether they ever fixed that, I don't know. But believe me, a freight train could have gone through before Hank finally came out with a line somewhere, or Jimmy did. But it was a scene between the two of them in the captain's cabin. Jimmy suddenly went, because he was always mad in the character. But he just dried up, and he couldn't think of what the line was, and Hank couldn't help him. Nobody could help him. And I was sitting in the wings watching, and I thought I was going to die. Those were the days. I loved live TV. I did an awful lot of it. I had about 5 different series, actually. I don't know why I'm digressing this much, but at different times back in the 40s and early 50s, I had 5 different series before series really meant anything, before they became really important, you know, or made stars out of people or anything. My first wife and I had, we were in all 5 of them together, as a matter of fact. All kinds of different ones, including the Ad Libbers, which was the toughest show I've ever done in my life to this day, where we would go into a theater and there'd be an audience and TV cameras. He would explain to the audience what was going to happen, that someone in the audience, when they raised their hand and he pointed at them, they would say a line, just any old line, like, close that door. And one of the 2 characters chosen to be on stage at that time had to turn to the other one and say, close that door, and that was to start a 3-minute scene that should be funny
Doc, will you tell him what you were
saying? Unless we were designated that it should be dramatic, 30 seconds before the 3 minutes were up, a red light would go on in the foots so that the actors would know, and they now had to wrap it up, and it better end up funny. I almost got fired every week. But it's amazing how good that training was. It's wild. Some of those skits I saw years later on Kinescopes. I don't have any of them myself, but some of them were wonderful.
Well, right now, that's exactly what you're doing.
Are you kidding?
Look, whether you like it or not, this sorry old bucket does a necessary job, and you're the guy who keeps a lumbering
along. To continue with the commentary, please select chapter 10 on the Jump to a Scene menu page.
You're deeper in a cruelest war than you'd ever...
Doc, in a minute, you'll start quoting Ralph Waldo Emerson.
That is a lousy thing to say.
You've got nothing to do with the war. Maybe that's why we're on this ship, because we're not good enough to fight. Because our glands don't secrete enough adrenaline, or our... great-great-grandmothers were afraid of the dark or something.
What is it you want to be, Doc? A hero?
Hero, Doc? You haven't heard a word I've said. Look, Doc, the war's way out there and I'm here. Well, I don't want to be here. I want to be out there. I'm sick and tired of being a lousy spectator. I just happen to believe in this thing and I want to feel I'm good enough to be in it.
Good enough, Doc. You're good enough. Just that you have the opportunity. That's mostly what makes physical heroism. Opportunity. It's a reflex. I think that 75 out of 100 young males have that reflex. You take any one of them. Say even Frank Thurlow Pulver here. Put him into a B-29 over Japan. Do you know what you'd have?
No, I don't, Doctor.
You'd have Pulver, the Congressional Medal of Honor winner. Pulver, who single-handed shot down 23 attacking Zeros. Pulver, who with his bare hands held together the severed wing struts of his plane... and with his bare feet, successfully landed his mortally wounded plane on his home field. It's reflex. It's like the knee jerk. Strike the patella tendon of any human being and you produce the knee jerk. Look.
What's the matter, Doc?
Nothing, but stay out of B-29, Frank, my boy.
You made your point very vividly, Doc. But I still want to get in this thing. And I'm going to keep on sending in these letters until I do.
Yes, I know you are, Doc.
I haven't got much time. That task force I saw was on its way to start our last big push in the Pacific. I'm going to catch it.
LCMs coming alongside. Will Mr. Roberts report topside immediately? Mr. Roberts, topside.
Doc, what are you going to give Doug for his birthday?
I hadn't thought of giving him anything.
I'm going to show him he's got old Pulver.
Happy Ford could be tough. I mean, he could be tough.
Like you, Doc.
And he was also famous for pulling tricks on actors. Now, I must admit, in all due respect, because this is one of the greatest directors that ever lived, and it was my good fortune to have a great part with a great director, who was bright enough to leave me alone. Anyway, he would pull tricks on actors, and he was famous for it, to get a certain performance or a certain reaction from them that he wanted on film. Personally, as an actor, I kind of resent that, because what it basically is saying is, I don't think that you're good enough to do it as an actor. I'm going to trick you into doing it. And that's why I've always resented it. But he's famous for it. Of course, the most famous was with Victor McLaughlin in The Informer. McLaughlin had a scene where they break him down in questioning him, and he finally breaks and admits that he was guilty of doing something, etc., which is going to mean at the end of him. And what Pappy Ford did was, he went to, I think it was Preston Foster. That name comes to my mind anyway. But whoever, and the other actors that were in this upcoming scene in which they questioned him and said, we're going to do this scene tomorrow. He said, work on it tonight and get your lines cold. Absolutely cold. And then be in here at 7:30 or whatever the call was, sharp, he said, because I want to stage it with you guys first, before Vic comes in. He then told McLaughlin, you've got tomorrow off. go out and have a good time tonight.
Can't we take our shirts off?
So McLaughlin did exactly that, and he sent Big Boy Williams or somebody like that with him and got McLaughlin drunk as a skunk, and he finally rolled into bed in the wee small hours of the morning, and the next thing he knew, there was a phone call about 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning. He says, "You better get in here. Pappy Ford wants you now." So he stumbled into the studio. Ford pointed to a chair and said, "Sit in it." And then he said, "Turn that light on." And they put the bright spot on him like that, and he sat. And the guys walked in, and they had all been staged, the three guys around him. They started throwing the lines at him in the famous scene. And he was trying like hell to remember them. He didn't know that Ford was rolling the camera. And he was stumbling and hemming and hawing, and then all of a sudden, every now and then, he'd remember one, and he blurted out and everything. And it was a wild scene. It was really a very unusual performance and a marvelous one. But it's a hell of a way to get it. Anyway, McLaughlin won the Academy Award. Here I am saying that Ford is full of baloney for doing this to actors, but I still feel that way. At any rate, Cagney told me about all of this when we got to Midway Island, and that was when we first started shooting. And every morning, or rather every night, Cagney and I would be on the call sheet for a certain scene that was not our first scene in the film, but a scene together. And then in the morning, they'd come in and they'd say, "No, Pappy says he won't need you today." Now, this went on for 2 weeks. And about halfway through the second week, where we would be told, "No, he doesn't need you today." And Jimmy and I had rehearsed this scene over and over and over during the afternoons and mornings and so forth while we were just sitting back there, and they were out shooting on the ship offshore. Then Cagney, suddenly I saw him get this funny look in his eye, and he says, "Uh-huh." And I said, "What?" He says, "I knew it. I know as well as I'm sitting here what he's up to." And I said, "What?" He said, "The son of a gun is suddenly going to call us out there, and he's going to throw another scene at us, not the one that's down on the schedule for us, and we better know it." Well, we started rehearsing every scene that we had, at every moment in the entire picture that we were ever seeing each other. And we had that script cold as a haddock. I mean, we really had it. And then I said, "Well, if he does pull this on us, you know what I'll bet?" And then Cagney said, "What?" He says, "I'll bet that it's the big scene, the first one, where you first spot me and say, 'Who are you? And how long have you been on board?'" And I say, 19 months. He says, "How come I've never seen you?" And I say, "I guess I've been in the laundry or something or other." He says, "Well, what are you?" I say, "Laundry and morale officer." That's it. It's a marvelous scene, and it's a very funny scene, as long as you don't think it's funny. The old adage that comedy is very serious business is really true. You must play comedy as if it is not funny, but deadly serious. Then it becomes funnier. But if an audience senses that the actors ever think that it's funny, you're through. They resent it. They don't like it. They may not be able to put their finger on what it is that bothers them, but it bothers them, and rightfully so. Anyway, Jimmy and I rehearsed that first scene. My God, I never knew a scene better in my life and was better prepared for a scene. And sure enough, one morning, I'm snoozing away, and Ward Bond, of all people, shakes me and wakes me up. And I said, "What?" Because Ward and I were in the same room at the Bachelor Officer's Quarters on Midway Island, and that's where we were staying. And he said, I did my bit for the day. I had a thing with the crew." And he says, "But Pappy wants you out there right away, you and Jimmy." And I said, "Aha." Up I jumped, threw on my clothes. Jimmy was already waiting downstairs for me. We're into the Jeep, off to the dock, and out to the boat. When we got out to the boat, the camera was set up, and Ford said to me, "You're up at the top of the stairs there." And he says, "And you come down, you suddenly see the captain for the first time, you try to do an about face and get out, and the captain says, 'You there, come here.'" And I said, "Oh, you mean scene such and such that was not scheduled?" He says, "That's right," and he smiled. And I said, "Okay, sir." And I went up to the top of the steps, and I winked to Cagney. He was down below waiting. And instead of walking down, I just put my hands on the railings and slid down. Because I thought, I don't know, I was just thought it was a snappy piece of business. I was an egotistical young actor showing off, is what it was. But at any rate, whether it was motivated or not, I did it. And landed with a tremendous crash down at the bottom. And Cagney and I were into the scene. Ford was shooting the rehearsal. And we went through the entire scene. Ending up with Jimmy saying, and my exiting, and Jimmy turning it near the camera and saying to the crew, who he would then cut to, now that's what I call an officer or something, or that's the way to behave, whatever. I've forgotten the lines now at this point. But at any rate, it went very, very well. We did it twice, and that was it. And Ford kept looking at the two of us. You know, I'd see him in between takes just looking at us like, you bastards, you've been working on this, and I know it, etc. I thought I had you, but I didn't. He thought, I'm sure, that it would be terrific if Pulver was totally thrown, which he was in the scene by the captain. However, an actor still must be in control of what he's doing. If he is playing frightened, the actor himself can't be frightened. You don't throw him in a pen full of boa constrictors and then roll the cameras, you know. But I think that he felt that if the scene was thrown at me, even if we had to take the time for me to learn the lines right there and then, which of course we didn't, fortunately, that it would bring an added thing to it. But he was very happy in the end, and I must say that night he said, that was damn good work, thank you. But he was a character, I'll tell you.
Except for one thing, sir. I don't like starch in my pajamas. You'll watch out for that, won't you, Pulver?
Yes, sir.
Fine. Doing very good work, Pulver.
To continue with the commentary, please select Chapter 13 on the Jump to a Scene menu pages.
Cut it out, Doug. Now, knock it off. Oh, cut it out. He's got a nerve.
Sir,
he's
got all those solutions.
Oh, wait till next week, Doug. You just wait. Wait till next week he gets his line for you. Wait and see. Doug, I'm going to get some starch. You know, some of that real thick starch, like they use on nurses' uniform. If I could be with you, I'd love you strong. If I could be with you, I'd love you long. I want you to know I wouldn't go.
And when old Robert said that, I thought the captain was going to lose his morals.
Hey, listen, stop, old Robert. He's it.
Nice going, Mr. Roberts.
It was really beautiful the way you read the old man off.
You're going to send in another letter next week, Mr. Roberts?
He sure is. And it's my turn to shove it right under the old man's nose. Huh, Mr. Roberts?
Yeah, but you got a promotion coming up, haven't you?
Yeah, but could he stop that or something?
Promotion? This is Mr. Roberts. You think he gives a good hoot about another lousy strike?
Yeah.
We got to write a real hot one next week, huh, Mr. Roberts? We'll use asbestos paper. He'll fix the old man's clock. You wait.
Yeah. All men who have not been put on report for 3 weeks can now go swimming for 10 minutes. That is all.
And one night, I don't know how many people know about this, but there was rumors around. But most, I think they were confined, really, to the industry. But Hank was not happy with the film because Ford was adding an awful lot of stuff that was not in the script. And there's a very simple reason why, I realize after all these decades, is a director worth his salt wants it to be his film. He doesn't want to do somebody else's version. Now, what we really were doing was the play, which was Josh Logan's version. And I don't think that Pappy Ford was just in his character, in his makeup, able to not put some touches in there that were his. And most of them were stuff that he had me doing that never did end up on the screen. And thank God, they were funny. Well, but they shouldn't have been there. They were almost like a burlesque sketch at times. He had Pulver doing crazy things and leaning on guns that had just been shot in practice and they were hot. And I'd jump a mile because I'd burned myself and all of this. All kinds of different things. When the nurses came aboard and I was showing them around was when most of it occurred. And he spent damn near a whole day just shooting me and making things up and saying, do this, do that, do this, do that. I'd say, okay, let's wing it. And I was having fun doing it, but in the back of my mind, I wondered, and I saw Hank just leaning against a bulkhead, watching all of this stuff going on with a straight face, with no smile, no nothing. And I went up to him in between one of the takes where he had me drinking dirty dishwater out of a ladle, and then telling the cook, add salt, etc., as if it was soup. I said, you're not very happy about this, are you? He said, hell no. He says, it has nothing to do with Mr. Roberts, the play. And I said, I agree with you. And he says, well, there's nothing much you can do about it because he's the director. But he says, if you can screw it up, do it. I remember that. I had a hunch even then that stuff would not end up in the film, and it didn't.
So am I.
Hey, well, then, listen, Doug, why don't you just take the girls off somewhere and tell them all about it, huh?
Gee, I wish I could, Frank, but I got to clean up. I did a lot of laundry today.
Sure.
Betsy Palmer was, I had known in New York for my days in the theater and mainly live TV in New York. A lovely person, a very good actress. Matter of fact, I saw her not too recently at some major function, I've forgotten what. And she's still lovely looking and just as lovely as ever. She was great fun to work with, and she's very good. She's very solid. The other girls were fun, too. They really had very little to do, though. You know, Betsy was the only one who had a role of any kind of substance, really, in it. And I'm not sure. I don't think they were in the play, were they? No, I don't believe that the girls were actually seen in the play. All we saw is everybody looking through binoculars and supposedly seeing them when they thought they weren't being seen, of course.
Put some more salt, Cookie. Put some more salt there.
Pulver being the leader of that little coup. I enjoyed working with Betsy very much, but I remember thinking at the time, it's too bad she doesn't have more to do, you know, in the play. But by the same token, I think it would have thrown the balance if they had played up the girls more. I think it would have taken away from the main thrust of the play, which was the guys and Doug, meaning Hank Fonda.
Oh, well, I can make an exception in your case.
Thank you.
Steph, look at the fish jumping over there, huh?
It's a whale.
Yeah. A real interesting call.
To continue with the commentary, please select chapter 16 on the jump to a scene menu pages.
Hey, I can! Why, you can almost reach out and... Oh!
Glasses. Well, you certainly can see Kobina.
Lieutenant! We gotta get back and hang those window curtains right away.
Ten hut! Right heat! Hard! Hut! Hut! Two, three, four! Hut! Two, three, four! Hut! Two, three, four! So long, harmless.
I was just getting the hang of this thing, too.
Yeah, now we've got nothing to look forward to. Just that same cruddy island.
Look, you gotta rub it in. Why don't you shut up?
You gonna make me?
Shut up a second. How did you find out?
Oh, we seen them taking a bath.
Through this glass, Mr. Roberts. We could see all of them.
You heard what she said. They're gonna hang some curtains.
Yeah. Gee, them nurses was pretty to look at.
Well, they got a 10-minute boat ride. You still got 10 minutes.
Yeah, but... wouldn't be any fun when you know you're going to be rushed. This is the first real good day this bucket's ever had. It's all over now.
Well, maybe you got time then to listen to a little piece of news.
when, in all respects, ready for sea on or about 1600 a day, the AK-601 will proceed at 10 knots via points X-ray, Yoke, and Zebra to Elysium Island, arriving there in 7 days and reporting to the port director for cargo assignment. During its stay in Elysium, the ship will make maximum use of the recreational facilities of this port.
But that means liberty.
That don't mean liberty, Mr. Roberts.
That's exactly what it means.
Somebody must have been drunk to send us to a liberty port.
The old man seen them orders?
Saw them before I did.
But Elysium, where's that?
Yeah, where's that, Mr. Roberts?
Elysium is the largest of the Limbo Islands. It's often referred to as the Polynesian Paradise. Vanilla, sugar, cocoa, coffee, copra, mother pearl, phosphates, and rum are the chief exports.
Rum? You hear that?
Shut up. Elysium City, its capital, is a beautiful metropolis of palm-lined boulevards, handsome public buildings, and colorful stucco homes. Since 1900, its population has remained remarkably constant at approximately 30,000.
Wait till we get there.
Come on, Mr. Roberts, go on.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about aids to navigation. And Elysium Harbor, offering excellent anchorage and docking facilities, is surrounded on three sides by beautiful green cloud-covered hills. The natives are noted for their congeniality and hospitality.
Tie this? It's been so long, I sort of forgot.
It's all right. What are you going to do when you get ashore, Booksy?
Kid'll probably go to the first saloon. Ice cream saloon, eh, Booksy?
Haven't thought much about it. I got my camera mod sent me. Guess I'll just wander around.
Here. Hey, Lindstrom. Got good news for you. You can take off them Liberty whites.
I ain't got the duty tonight.
That's right. You and Mr. Roberts got the duty tonight.
Now hear this.
Here we go. Here we go.
This is the captain speaking. I just found out that there's men on this vessel expecting Liberty. Now, I don't know how this rumor got around, but I'd like to clear it up right now. On account of cargo requirements and security conditions, which have just come to my personal attention, there will be no Liberty while in this here port. That is all.
Hey.
Come in, Mr. Roberts. 28 seconds. Pretty good time. You see, I've been expecting you.
Okay, how about it? When does this crew get liberty?
In the first place, just kind of hold your tongue. I'm still captain here.
When are you going to let this crew go ashore?
I'm not. It was not my idea coming to this Liberty port. It seems one of my officers arranged it with a certain port director. Gave him a bottle of Scotch whiskey, compliments of the captain. The port director was kind enough to send me a little thank you note, along with our order. Sit down, Mr. Roberts. Now, I admit I was a little provoked about not being consulted. Then I got to thinking, maybe we ought to come to this port so you and me could have a little talk.
All right, take it out of me, but not of them, man. Don't you hear that music? Don't you know it's tearing those guys apart? They're breakable, Captain, I promise you.
Now, you listen to me. I've got two things I want to show you. That is the cap of a full commander. I'm going to wear that cap someday, and you're going to help me. Now, it won't do any harm to tell you that you helped me win that palm tree by working cargo. Now, don't let this go to your head. But when Admiral Finchley awarded me that palm tree, he said, you've got a good cargo officer, Morton. Keep him at it. You're going places. And I went right out and bought that hat. And nobody ain't going to stand between me and that hat. Certainly not you. Now, last week, it was agreed that there were to be no more of these disharmony letters.
I didn't say that.
Now, what do I find on my desk this morning? Another one. It says here, friction between me and the commanding officer. That ain't going in, mister.
How are you going to stop it, Captain?
I ain't. You are. Just how much do you want this crew to have a liberty? Enough to stop this friction? Enough to stop writing letters ever? Because that's the only way this crew is going to get ashore. This day or any other day. Now we've had our little chat. What do you say?
How did you get in the Navy? How did you get on our side? Ah, you ignorant, arrogant, ambitious, keeping 62 men in prison. Because you got a palm tree for the work they did. I don't know which I hate worse, you or that other malignant growth that stands up
for you.
How did you ever get command of a ship? I realize in wartime they have to scrape the bottom of the barrel. Where'd they ever scrape you up?
There's just one thing left for you, mister. A general court-martial.
That suits me fine. Court-martial me.
You got it.
I'm asking for it. If I can't get transferred, I'll get court-martialed off. I'm fed up. But you'll need a witness. Call your messenger. I'll say it all over again in front of him. Go on, call him. You want me to call him?
You're a smart boy, Roberts. But I know how to take care of smart boys. I hate your guts, you smart college guys. I've been seeing your kind around since I was 10 years old, working as a busboy. Oh, busboy, it seems my friend is thrown up on the table. Clean up that best boy, will ya? And then when I went to sea as a steward, people poking at you with umbrellas. Oh, boy, you boy. Careful with that luggage, boy. And I took it. I took it for years. But I don't have to take it anymore. There's a war on, and I'm captain of this vessel. And now you can take it for a change. The worst thing I can do to you is to keep you right here, mister. And here is where you're going to stay. Get out!
What do you want for liberty, Captain?
You are through writing letters. Ever.
Okay.
That's not all. You're through talking back to me in front of the crew. When I give an order, you jump.
Is that all, Captain?
No. Anyone know you're in here?
No one.
Good. And you're not to go blabbing this around to anyone, ever. Might not sound so good. Besides, I don't want you to take credit for getting this...
You think I'm doing this for credit? You think I'd let anyone know about this?
I gotta make sure.
Well, you got my word, that's all.
Your word, yeah. You college boys make such a great show of keeping your word. All right. Now, hear this. This is the captain speaking. I've had further word on the subject of liberty. It gives me great pleasure to announce liberty for the starboard section commencing.
The whole crew or there's no deal. I mean it.
Correct. Liberty for the entire crew will commence immediately.
I repeat, you don't have to tell them again.
Liberty.
They heard you. Look at those crazy lugs. Just listen to them.
One night, we were all invited to one of the junior officers' houses. They had some little houses there. Some of the guys, the lucky ones, got little houses to live in. And some of them had their wives with them. We were invited over to somebody's house, anyway, for meatballs and spaghetti and this and that. So we all went, and Cagney commandeered a Jeep, and he was driving. And there was two or three of us in the Jeep with him, and he drove us over to the house, and we were all there, and the party's going on, and everybody's drinking and having a good time, and someone made me sit at the piano and play the piano, which I do at times. Some lady sat down beside me, an attractive young lady was sitting beside me, and that's all. She was just sitting there. Now, in this sort of living room, there was a opening in the wall, like a counter, and it was open space into the kitchen, and suddenly I hear a commotion in the kitchen, and screaming, and I look in, and there's a guy in there with a butcher knife in his hand, and his arm's up in the air, and about three other guys have got a hold of his arm and are trying to wrestle him down and everything, and he's hollering, "If you'll forgive me, I'll kill the son of a bitch." And apparently it was a junior officer or something, a quartermaster, whatever he was. It was his wife who sat on the bench, and he just assumed suddenly, I guess, that I was making a pass at his wife, which is totally untrue. I hadn't even talked to her. She was talking to me about songs and trying to pick them out on the piano, and I was trying to put chords to it. Anyway, the next thing I know, I feel two hands on my collar from behind, and I'm lifted straight up into the air and pulled away from the piano and pushed towards the door. It was Cagney. He had me, and he got me, and he said, "Just keep going." He got me outside down the steps, and he says, "Get in that Jeep." And I said, "Yes, sir." And I jumped into the Jeep, Cagney jumped in, drove me back to the bachelor officer's quarters, and we were all right, but he saved my neck. This guy really was ready to go with that knife. But they said, which is understandable, that you get a little rock happy after a while, and a lot of the guys got very jumpy, and when they were to have duty, a friend of theirs would walk up and down with a rifle in front of their house, guarding the house. In other words, making sure nobody went in to try to get the guy's wife. You know, to rape her or have an affair or whatever they were doing. I don't know. It was hard for me to believe, but it was true.
No, sir. The Army will take charge of that end. Colonel Middleton will want to know what punishment you're going to give these men.
Well, you tell him I'm sure our captain will think of something.
But, sir...
Call, Sergeant.
Thank you, sir.
Good night.
Yeah. Huh?
So long, you guys.
See you around, Larry.
Oh, mate.
So long, Max. Thanks, huh?
Well,
I also was in Hawaii then.
Okay, if we go ashore again.
Don't ask me why. I was always in Hawaii. Maybe if I go to Hawaii, I'll get nominated again. But that's where I was when I heard about it. I got a phone call from my then partner, Dick Carter, in my little company. I had a two-bit little company, which is what we're all sitting in the office now. He called me in Hawaii and said, you've been nominated, and I was thrilled. And it was the minute I put the phone down, I was going with a lady named Felicia Farr, who became Felicia Lemon. And the phone rang again, and it was Felicia. And she was mad as hell because Dick Carter had called first, because he called her before he called me. And she said, I want to call Jack, so don't call him. And he thought that he had waited long enough, and she'd gotten me, but her call hadn't come through yet. I was totally thrilled, completely thrilled. And people were wonderful about it. One of the things that pleases me is something that I was able to do years later. A kid, gosh, who was one of the crew members, and I can't remember his name, unfortunately, at the moment. But at any rate, the day of the awards, my then-wife, Cynthia, and I were living on Kenter Avenue out in Brentwood, outside, out beyond Beverly Hills and Hollywood. He went over to Warner Brothers and went into wardrobe and stole my ensign's cap that I wore in the film. And then he drove to our house and gave it to me, not only because he wanted me to have it, but as a good luck token for the festivities tonight. And I thought that was absolutely marvelous. And then, fade out, fade up, years later, when Hank was up for it, and everybody knew he was going to win it, Felicia and I drove over to Hank and Shirley's, and I had the hat, and I said, I want you to have this as a memento. And he cracked up, and so did I. But he really appreciated it. Anything to do with Roberts, it was his Bible. You know, he just loved that show and respected it immensely, which is why he would get mad when Pappy would try to do anything, you know, that wasn't in the Bible, in the script, which was literally the play.
Hello, Frank. How was your liberty?
I'm telling you true, I'd be anything but blue if I could be with you.
Hello.
All right, you men know your post.
Off to the deck. I hope you don't mind, but I've stationed my men along your starboard side. I'm sorry, but this ship is restricted for the rest of its stay in Elysium. Your captain is to report to the island commander at 7 o'clock this morning. I recommend that he's there on time. Admiral's a pretty tough cookie when he's mad. Madder than I ever seen him.
What in particular did this?
Well, a little while ago, six men from your ship broke into the home of the French colonial governor. Started throwing things through a plate glass living room window. We found some of the things on the lawn. Large world globe. Small love seat. A lot of books. A bust of Balzac.
And I remember one night, the stunt man that had been carried all those weeks, who was supposed to drive the motorcycle off the end of the pier and into the water, he took a look at the thing and the waves and everything else and said, I won't do it. So Pappy turned around and he says, well, who's going to drive this motorcycle? And guess who stuck his hand up like an idiot? Me. I said, I'll do it. And he says, do you know how to drive a motorcycle? I said, no. He says, you won't do it. Thank God. But another guy, some local guy, said, I can drive a motorcycle, I'll do it. And he rolled off that thing, or it would have split him in two when it hit the water. He rolled off that thing just before it hit the water, as I remember. And it was a heck of a shot. I remember the poor camera operator. He had one chance to get that shot, keep the motorcycle in the center of the frame, and follow it. And he had no idea what was going to happen, and he just did a beautiful job with it. But the sweat was pouring, I'll tell you.
Get up here, you idiot! What are you trying to do? Get up here!
To continue with the commentary, please select chapter 32 on the Jump to a Scene menu pages.
Kicked out! Kicked out! The first time I ever kicked out of a port! You're going to pay for this, mister! Now get that gangway up and we're going to get out of here!
See? Bringing the gangway single up all lines. We've been kicked out of port.
Books ran aboard, sir. He didn't come back last night.
Books, sir?
No, sir.
Get that gangway up, mister! And I mean now, Jack!
Yes, sir. I'm surprised at you, Bookser.
Yes, sir. So am I.
Where'd you meet her, anyway?
At a church social.
All night?
We went for a walk down the beach, sir. We sat there and counted the stars. Honest, sir. That's all.
You better get below.
Yes, sir.
Prisoner accounted for, sir.
Right here, mister. Well, I guess you're mighty proud of yourselves, getting me kicked out of port that way. Well, we are going to erase this bluff from my record if we have to work 24 hours a day. Right, Mr. Roberts?
Yes, sir.
We are going to move more cargo than we ever moved before. Right, Mr. Roberts?
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Roberts is going to see to it that you men toe the line at all times. That's right, too. Isn't it, mister?
That's right, sir.
And you know as well as I do that Mr. Roberts is a man who keeps his word. And Roberts, you do a good job, and one of these days there may be a promotion in it for you. An extra little bar on that collar. That would be all right, wouldn't it, mister? Wouldn't that be all right, Roberts?
Yes, sir, if you say so.
You just heard me say so. Take over. See, they work up a sweat. I just gave an order. And they ain't had no answer. I'm waiting.
Aye, aye, sir.
That's better. That's more like it.
Deck division, break out the chippers and scrapers and get after that rust. Engineering division. Air bedding. Fallout. making all that guff for?
Yes, sir. No, sir.
Hey, killer. Do you really think he's bucking for promotion?
Who, Mr. Roberts?
He's just tired, that's all. Promotion.
Yeah, that's right. He's just tired.
Oh, Mr. Roberts, I got something here. A little love letter from the Bureau came in just this morning. Hey, get a load of this. To all ships and stations, heightened war offensive has created urgent need aboard combat ships for experienced officers. All commanding officers are hereby directed to forward with their endorsement all applications for transfer from officers with 24 months sea duty. You got 29 months. Does that put old stupid behind the eight ball or don't it? Here's your letter, Mr. Roberts, all typed up and ready to go. Just the old John Hancock.
Hey, go ahead, Mr. Roberts. I want to hear him explode.
Yeah, he'll go right through the overhead.
Go ahead, Mr. Roberts.
I want to look it over first, Dolan.
What's it to look over? It's just a standard form.
Dolan, I'm not going to stand here and argue with you. I told you I want to look it over. I'll get back to your typewriter before I put you on report. All right, don't just stand here.
Hey, Mr. Roberts.
It has not been confirmed by other correspondents or by SHAPE headquarters. But
here is one highly intriguing fact. That report has not been denied.
Either turn that thing off, will you, Doc?
Or in SHAPE headquarters in Europe.
Doug ever said anything to you about wanting a promotion?
Yeah, of course not. I doubt if he's even conscious of what rank he is.
He never thinks about a promotion. All he ever thinks about is the war news. Anybody says he's fucking for another stripe is a dirty liar.
Who says he is?
Dan Signa and Mannion and some of those other guys. I heard them talking. Outside the porthole. You know, talking loud on purpose so I'd hear them. Must have guessed I was lying here in my sack. What's happened to Doug anyway, Doc?
How would I know? He's spoken about 10 words to me in as many days. I'll find out, though.
He won't talk, Doc. I followed him all around the room this morning while he was shaving. I begged him to talk to me. I said, you're a fellow who needs a friend, boy, and here I am. And what's all this trouble between you and the crew? You know, you tell me, I'll fix it up like that. Then I gave him a lot of good advice, you know, things like keep your chin up and, you know, things like that. Well, you know what he did? He walked right out of this room just as though I wasn't here. And I was here.
Mr. Roberts is turning out to be like an officer, ain't he?
Hey, boy, we thought you were up in the radio shack listening to the war news.
Don't you want to go out to the wardroom and get a cup of coffee?
Yeah, sure, I'll go with you.
No, I don't want to. You go ahead.
Well,
Will you get out anyway? I want to talk to Doc.
All right, I'm going for a cup of coffee. No, I'm not. I'm going up the radio shack and listen to the war news. You're not the only one interested. See you later, Doc. Doc.
Transfer me, will you?
Transfer me to the hospital on this next island. You can do it. You don't need the captain's approval. Just put me ashore for examination. Say there's something wrong with my eyes or my feet or my head. You can trump up something.
What good would that do?
Plenty. I could lie around that hospital for a couple of weeks. The ship would have sailed and I'd have missed it. I'd be off this ship. Will you do it, Doc?
Doug, what's really the matter?
I just put Dolan on report.
On report? Why?
Because I gave him an order and he didn't carry it out fast enough to suit me. No, that's not true. It's the war. I heard the news. The war was ending and I couldn't get to it. There's Dolan giving me guff about something. All of a sudden, I hated him. I hated all of them. If they think I'm bucking for a promotion, if they think I'd walk 10 feet across the room to get anything from that captain, I'm through with the whole ungrateful mob.
Does his crew owe you something?
What do you mean by that?
You talked as if they did.
That's exactly how I'm talking. Doc, that shows you how far gone I am. I've been blaming them for something that...
What? Something what?
Doug, you've made some sort of an agreement with the captain, haven't you? Agreement? I don't know what you mean.
Doc, turn on the radio. Turn it on!
This broadcast will bring you a special news flash. The war is over in Europe. The war is over in Europe. Germany has surrendered unconditionally to the Allied armies. The surrender was signed in a schoolhouse in the city of Reims.
I would remind you that there's still a minor skirmish here in the Pacific.
I'll miss that, too. But this is the greatest day in the world. We got to celebrate. How about it, Frank?
Yeah, Doc, we got to celebrate.
What'll it be, alcohol and orange juice or orange juice and alcohol?
No, Doc, that's not good enough.
No, that's not good enough, Doc.
We got to think of something to lift this ship right up out of the water and turn it around the other way.
But, Doc, you're going to blow your lids when you hear this idea. Oh, what a sweet idea. You said I never finished anything I started. Oh, boy, you're wrong. Tonight I started something. I'm going to finish it.
Frank, wait a minute. What is it?
A firecracker. We're going to heave a firecracker under that old man's bunk and bam, bam, bam! Wake up, you unpatriotic old slob. It's VE Day.
Frank.
Did you ever see such a hand-painted, hand-packed firecracker in your life?
Well, Frank, that's the most beautiful firecracker I ever saw in my life. But will it work?
Sure it'll work. Well, I think it will.
Haven't you tested it, Frank? It's got to work. It's just got to work.
I'll take it down to the laundry. That's my laboratory. I got all the makings down there. If this one works, I can make another one in 2 minutes.
Okay, Frank, take off. We'll wait here for you.
Be sure you got enough to make it loud.
Yeah. What do you use for powder?
Powder? This ain't no pop gun. It's a firecracker. I use fulminate of mercury. I'll be back in a minute.
Fulminate of mercury? That stuff's murder. Do you suppose he means it?
Yeah, of course not. Where would he get fulminate of mercury?
I don't know. He's pretty resourceful.
Well, how about a little drink?
Right. Doc, I've been living with the genius. This makes everything worthwhile. A whole year and a half he spent in his bunk. How else could you celebrate VE Day? A firecracker into the old man's bunk.
To better days.
Right. And to a great American, Frank Thurlow Pulver. Soldier, statesman, scientist,
friend of the working girl.
What was that?
I don't know what it was, Captain, but I'll try and find out. Hey there, up in the bridge. Is there anything wrong up there?
Bad, Doug.
Jesus, that's terrific!
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm great! Gee, you should have been there.
You're not burned or anything?
No, but that laundry's kind of beat up. You know those laundry machines? They're clear over the other side of the room now. And there's a new porthole in the starboard side. The electric eye went right through. I guess a steam line must have busted or something. I was up by here and lather and all soap suds flying all around. It was absolutely beautiful. Well, what was it? Has anybody found out?
It was the laundry, Captain. A steam line must have busted.
Any damage?
We can't get in there. The passageway is solid soap suds.
Well, tell those men to be more careful.
Aye, aye, sir.
our celebration is just getting started.
Yes,
the night is young and our duty's clear.
What are we going to do now, Doug?
We're going down and get the rest of your stuff. You proved that it worked. You just hit the wrong target, that's all. We're going to make another firecracker and put it where it really belongs.
All of my stuff was down in the laundry. It all went up. I'm sorry, Doug. I'm awful sorry.
That's okay, Frank.
You're not sore at me now, are you?
What for?
Spoiling the celebration?
Of course not.
It was a good idea, wasn't it, Frank?
It was a great idea. I'm proud of you. It just didn't work, that's all. Where are you going, Doug?
Out on deck.
Well, wait, I'll get cleaned up. I'll come with you, Doug.
I'm going to turn in after that. It's okay, Frank.
He was happy there for a minute. You hear him laughing? Find out what's the matter with him?
No, he wouldn't tell me. But I know one thing he's feeling tonight. That's panic. Tonight he feels his war is dying before he can get to it.
I let him down. To celebrate, and I let him down.
We hope that the king and queen will come out. The crowd are cheering. Listen to them. And at any second now, we hope to see their majesties. The colour here is tremendous. Everywhere, rosettes, everywhere, gay red, white, and blue hats.
Hey, what's all that jabbing on the radio?
I don't know. Something about the king and queen.
Wild, historic May evening. And although we celebrate with joyousness of heart, a great
steam line busted in the laundry. They're cleaning it up now. It ain't even worth going to see.
Come on, Dolan. Dolan will get you down.
Yeah, come on, Dolan.
Cheering madly.
Hey, what was the croquette things we had for Charon?
Nice man.
It comes into view. Then the king in the uniform of an admiral of the fleet, the two princesses standing on the balcony.
Good evening. You fellas hear the news? The war's over in Europe. Yes, sir, we heard.
Sure. Maybe somebody will get on the ball out here now.
Taking over San Francisco here in the Bay Area.
Dolan, I guess I kind of blew my top. I'm sorry, I'm taking you off the port.
Whatever you want, sir.
Well, guess I'll let the old sack.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Didn't realize how late it was.
Yeah.
They just run right out in front, stop these cars right here where they happen to be. Pile on, and we've seen as many as 25 on one sedan. We've seen as many as 10 to 12 on little coupes and roadsters. The old tires are just flat against the asphalt paving down here of these streets in downtown San Francisco.
I talked to you about 35 minutes ago. The picture's changed a little bit here in Times Square.
Our boys have won this victory today. But the rest is up to you. You, and you alone, must recognize our enemies. The forces of ambition, cruelty, arrogance and stupidity. You must recognize them. You must destroy them. You must tear them out as you would a malignant growth and cast them from the surface of the earth.
Thank you.
the general alarm! Sound the general alarm! Off to the deck!
Ship.
All right, now wait a minute. Laundry detail report to forward gun. Laundry detail report to forward. What happened? I'm coming.
Where's the gun?
Hey, Insignia.
Yeah.
Are you supposed to be up there?
Yeah. We was up here last year.
Hey, Dowdy, where's my battle station?
I don't know where your battle station is. Look around.
Look around. Ask a man politely where his battle station is, and he says, look around.
Engine room manned and ready. All battle stations manned and ready.
All except mine.
All battle stations manned and ready, Captain.
Are going to stand sweating at those battle stations until someone confesses. It's an insult to the honor of this ship. The symbol of our cargo record has been destroyed, and I am going to find out who did it if it takes all night.
Symbol of our cargo record? What's that? I don't know.
Devonowski, find some battle station.
Come on. Here. Read me that muster list.
Abernathy.
No, not Abernathy.
Baker.
No.
Bartholomew.
Baker.
Connie.
O'Neill.
No, not O'Neill.
Pulver.
Pulver. Pulver wouldn't have the guts. Go on.
Roberts.
Roberts. That's the one. Get him up here! Get him up here right now! Get him up here!
Mr. Roberts will report to the captain's cabin on the double. Mr. Roberts will report to the captain's cabin on the double.
Give me that! Roberts! Roberts, you get up here in one quick hurry! Roberts, get a move on! I'm giving you an order. Do you hear me, Roberts? This is it. You get a move on and get up here, for this is finally the showdown. We are going to have it out right here and now. You hear, Roberts? Get up here now.
You want to see me, Captain?
You did it. Don't stand there and lie to me. Confess it.
Confess what, Captain? I don't know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about because you did it. You double-crossed me. You've gone back on your word.
No, I haven't, Captain.
Oh, yes, you have. Yes, you have. I kept my part of the bargain. I gave this crew liberty. But you've gone back on your word. You promised me on your word of honor.
Well, I kept my word, Captain. I haven't written any more letters.
I'm not talking about your stinking rotten letters. I'm talking about what you did tonight.
Tonight? I don't understand you, Captain. What do you think I did tonight?
You know what you did. You stabbed me in the back.
Doctor, please report to the captain's cabin on the double. Will the doctor please report to the captain's cabin on the double?
Hey, Lindstrom, where's the old man? He's sitting in a chair and he's way forward. What's the doc doing? Doc's holding a wastebasket. What wastebasket? The one the old man's got his hat in. Whoops, there he goes again. They got him to the couch.
That's it. Now, we mustn't let ourselves get angry, Captain. We know that, don't we?
Look out, here they come.
We're not need the stretcher now. Sorry.
Chief.
Yes, sir.
Pass the word to the man to secure from General Quarters.
Aye, aye, sir. See you later.
Now hear this. Now hear this. Secure from General Quarters.
Good night, Mr. Roberts.
Good night, Reaver.
Good night, Mr. Roberts.
Good night, Wiley.
Good night, Mr. Roberts.
Good night, Lindstrom.
Good night, Mr. Roberts.
Good night, Mr. Roberts.
Good night, Mr. Roberts.
Good night, Kennedy.
Good night, Mr. Roberts. Good night, Mr. Roberts.
Good night, Dolan.
I'll take these down to the gangway. The boats in the island should be out here any minute for you. I'll let you know.
Thanks, Gerhardt.
Never thought you'd be taking this trip, did you?
I'll be off this bucket before I even wake up.
They're flying you all the way to the Livingston?
I don't know. Dispatch said transfer. Travel by air if possible. I guess it's all the way, though. They're landing planes at Okinawa now. That's where my can's probably running around.
Okinawa? You be mighty careful, Doug boy.
Okay, Frank. Doc, I even got a destroyer. The Livingston.
Well, I know a guy in the Livingston. He don't think it's so hot.
Here you are, Mr. Roberts. I typed up 3 copies of the radio dispatch. I have to keep 1 copy, and here's 2 for you. You are now officially detached from this here bucket. Let me be the first.
Thanks, Dolan. Dolan, how about these orders? I haven't sent in a letter for a month.
Listen, Mr. Roberts, I can tell you exactly how that happened. You see, those guys in Washington need men awful bad for combat duty. So they started looking through some of the old letters and come across one of yours.
I know, but you wouldn't...
Listen, Mr. Roberts, we can't stand here beating our gums. And the old man says, if he ain't out of here in 1 hour, I'll throw him off.
Is that all he said?
That's all he said.
After fighting this thing for 2 years, you think he'd say more than that?
Guard, I don't want no man closer than 10 feet. Understand?
What's that?
A new botanical garden. Ain't you heard?
No.
When we anchored this morning, he sent Olson out with a special detail. Dug up a new palm tree. He's already set a 24-hour watch on that new baby with orders to shoot to kill. Oh, that reminds me, Ensign Paul, but the captain wants to see you right away.
What about?
I don't know, sir. I'll come back to say goodbye later, Mr. Roberts. Come on, Ensign Paul.
Yeah, I'll let those guys down in the laundry starch his pajamas and get them.
Well, you're pretty happy, aren't you?
Yep. You're happy about it, too, aren't you, Doc?
Oh, I think it's the only thing for you.
What do you think of the crew now, Doug?
We're all right. I think they're nice guys, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think they feel about you?
Oh, they like me well enough till the next guy comes along.
You don't think you're necessary to them, huh?
Doc, no officer's necessary to a crew.
Are you going to leave this ship believing that?
That's nothing against them, Doc. They're too busy looking out for themselves to worry about anybody else.
Well, take a good, deep breath, Buster. What do you think got you your orders? Prayer and fasting? Sending in enough box tops?
Well, Dolan said one of my old letters turned up.
Bunk. This crew got you transferred. They were so busy thinking about themselves that they took a chance of landing in prison for 5 years, every one of them. You couldn't send in a letter of a transfer, so they sent one in for you. They knew the captain wouldn't sign it approved, so they didn't bother him. They signed it for him.
Doc, what do you mean? They forged the captain's name?
That's it, exactly. It's quite a thing to see, Doug. The captain's name signing contest. Every man in the crew trying his best to copy that rabbit little scrawl, the captain's. Then the judges decided the winner. At the time, there was some criticism of their decision on the grounds that the judges were drunk. But apparently, from the results, they chose pretty well.
How'd you find out about it, Doc?
Well, it's a great honor. I'm the only officer aboard who knows. I was a contestant. I was also a judge. This double honor was accorded me because of my character, charm, good looks, and because the medical department contributed 4 gallons of grain alcohol to the contest.
One. Who signed it?
I'm not at liberty to say. Basically, they all did. And with just one idea in mind. To do something for Mr. Roberts.
Wish you hadn't told me, Doc. Makes me look pretty silly after what I just said. But I didn't mean it, Doc. I was afraid to say what I really feel. I love those guys. I think they're the greatest guys on this earth. And all of a sudden, I feel there's something terribly wrong about leaving them. Doc, what can I say to them?
Nothing. You don't know about it. After you're safely aboard your new ship, I'm supposed to write, tell you about it. And at the bottom of the letter, I'm supposed to say, thanks for the liberty, Mr. Roberts. Thanks for everything.
New cargo officer. And that ain't all. I gotta have dinner with him tonight. He likes me.
Come in. What's that?
Fire and rescue party. Heard you had a fire in here.
No, but as long as you're here...
We got a false alarm then. In that case, we might as well drink this stuff.
What's the nap? New bat that jungle's used?
Yeah, in the handy new portable container. Everybody loaded? All right, you guys, you can come in now.
What is it?
Open it. What is it, Doug?
It's a palm tree, see? It was Dowdy's idea, sir.
Manion made it. He cut out a sheet press down in the machine shop.
Manion drew the words on it, too. Stefanowski thought up the words.
Booksy gets credit for the ribbon from a box of candy he got from his mother. Read the words, Mr. Roberts.
Quarter of...
Order to the Palm. To Lieutenant J.G. Douglas Roberts. For action against the enemy. Above and beyond the call of duty.
It's very nice, but I think you got the wrong guy.
We know, sir. But we'd like you to have it anyway.
Okay, I'll keep it.
Stefanowski thought up the words.
Fine words.
The boat's here, Mr. Roberts. I put your gear in. They want to shove off right away.
Haven't had a drink yet.
No, sir.
We won't get any jungle juice aboard that destroyer, Mr. Roberts.
That's right, Dolly. Bye, Doc.
Bye, Doc.
And thanks, Doc.
Okay.
Bye, Frank. Remember, I'm counting on you.
Mannion?
Newspapers.
8 weeks old.
Pulver.
Ensign Pulver. We just heard. No movies again tonight.
Why not?
I said we was making too much noise. We wasn't making too much noise, Ensign Pulver.
Talk to him, will you, Ensign Pulver?
What, me?
Talk to the cat. Yeah.
Book, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Lindstrom?
Yes, sir.
Dolan?
Here, sir.
Stefanowski?
Yes, right here, sir. Yep. My mother. All she ever says is stay away from Japan. What's your news, Doc?
My wife got some new wallpaper for the living room.
Pretty. Alabama. Oh, well, I shall read that one later.
Hey, Doc, this is from Doug.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What does he say? Hey, you guys, want to hear a letter from Mr. Roberts?
Yeah!
Dear Frank, this will be short and sweet, as we're shoving off in about 2 minutes. This was dated 3 weeks ago.
Does he say where he is?
Yeah, he says, my guess about the location of this ship is exactly right. Well, that means he's around Okinawa, all right. Fornell's... you met Fornell. You know, that friend of mine, a guy named Fornell, I went to college with? Well, that's what he says. Fornell says that you and he used to load up your car with liquor in Omaha and then sell it at an indecent profit to the fraternity boys at Iowa City. How about that? We did, too. what's this? This part is for Doc. I've been... Oh,
go ahead and read it. It's for both of us.
For Doc. I've been aboard this destroyer for 2 weeks now, and we've already been through 4 air attacks. I'm in the war at last, Doc. I've caught up with that task force that passed me by. I'm glad to be here. I had to be here, I guess.
But I'm thinking now of you, Doc, and you, Frank, and Dolan, and Doughty, and Insignia, and everyone else on that bucket. All the guys everywhere who sail from tedium to apathy and back again, with an occasional side trip to monotony. This is a tough crew on here, and they have a wonderful battle record. But I've discovered, Doc, that the unseen enemy of this war is the boredom that eventually becomes a faith, and therefore a terrible sort of suicide. And I know now that the ones who refuse to surrender to it are the strongest of all. Right now, I'm looking at something that's hanging over my desk. A preposterous hunk of brass attached to the most bilious piece of ribbon I've ever seen. I'd rather have it than the Congressional Medal of Honor. It tells me what I'll always be proudest of. That at a time in the world when courage counted most, I lived among 62 brave men. So, Doc, and especially you, Frank, don't let those guys down. Of course, I know that by this time they must be very happy because the captain's overhead is filled with marbles. And here comes the mail orderly. This has to go now. I'll finish it later. Meanwhile, you guys can write too, can't you? Doug.
May I see that, Frank?
Yeah. This one's from Fornell.
I'd rather have it than the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Well, I'm glad he found that out.
I remember that after we did the famous letter reading scene where I get a letter from a friend of mine, and at the end of the letter he says that Doug has been killed. It chokes me up even today. I shot it with Ford, and we did it. I was never too happy with it, frankly, but Ford liked it, and everybody seemed to like it. And days went by, weeks went by, Ford gets sick, Mervyn LeRoy comes on and takes over, and then at the end of the picture, believe it or not, we got a third director. Josh Logan. Anyway, he saw the film, and there was just a couple of things that he didn't think were right. And he and Hank had a talk, and then they decided to reshoot just a couple of scenes. I've forgotten what the other one was, but one of them was the letter reading scene. Well, I welcomed that myself because I had a different feeling about how I should do it than the way Pappy Ford saw it and the way we did it with him directing me. So I did it with Josh. I was very happy about it. Josh was happy. Everybody was happy about it. I think I even went to the rushes, which I didn't do in those days. And then I got a call. I had a day off, and so I called Pappy Ford, who was now home from the hospital, and said, could I drop by to say hello and see how you're doing and everything? And Mrs. Ford said, yes, he'd love to have you come by. When I walked into his bedroom, he says, I understand you did the letter reading scene again. And I said, what? Oh, yeah, yes, yeah, they wanted to reshoot it. I don't know. And he said, and somebody told me that you liked it better. I said, I can't judge those things. I don't know. I did it, that's all. You know, there's 80 ways to skin a cat and so forth. He says, but you didn't like it better than my version, did you? I said, no, of course not. I lied, which is a smart thing to do when you're in that position like that with Pappy Ford. And he said, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. So that was, he felt better about it. I don't think he cared as much about the fact that it was done differently as whether or not I liked it better than his version. That's what bothered him. But as you can tell, my love and my admiration for those guys and my gratitude is just beyond description and telling. It was a rare and unforgettable experience. I know that those have become trite terms, but it really was a one in a lifetime. And I've had a few of them. I've been extraordinarily fortunate. But that was one of the first. And it'll always be with me.